Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Nobody Panic. It's a general election special.
Oh,
that's not what I was expecting.
Yes,
that's how you vote.
Yes,
you have to shout hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. Just whatever, at any point on the 12th of December.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
Shout it once, that vote counts. That's it.
Done. You don't know who for, but they just guess. Presumably. That's why we're doing a general election special, because we don't understand
almost anything.
Pretty much anything, especially not politics. But I'm also like, yeah, I've been watching all the debates. I'm quite mouthy and engaged for someone that doesn't understand how a general election works.
Well, I was thinking that when the EU referendum happened, before that, we wrote a sketch that was about how much we didn't understand.
We did.
For the referendum. But I remember we really did not know what it meant to be in. Like, people were. It was of a hexaclon days in the past.
Halcyon, I think.
Why not?
But got it.
When people literally didn't know anything about politics.
Beautiful.
And now here we all are, so politically engaged.
If anything, we know too much without knowing anything.
Correct.
Which is why we've got an excellent guest, and we've got Marie Leconte, who is a French-Moroccan journalist. Correct?
Yes, I am.
Do you work for BuzzFeed and for the Evening Standard when you were full-time? Was that, is that
yes,
true?
That is correct.
And now you're freelance?
I am.
You're well into politics.
Oh, writing a book.
I'm so sorry.
The book is written.
And the book.
And the book is out.
She's written a book.
It's called Haven't You Heard?
Please explain your book so I don't sound like I'm just speaking for you, you know? I don't want to.
Hello, thanks for having me.
It's a delight.
My book is called Haven't You Heard? I've literally forgotten the full title now.
This is Gossip, great. This Power, is and How Politics Really Works.
That's the one. That
Good
is
Lord.
The book that I have written and that is out in shops. but yeah, no. So it's kind of like, it is about the role of gossip in politics and kind of, you know, like, the, yeah, I guess, you know, how much influence like whispers and rumours, etc. can have on the way the country is run. Because I kind of meant it. I didn't really want to write a book about politics for people who already like are obsessed with politics. I didn't really see the point in that. So it's very much kind of a book aimed at people who, like you guys, like, you know, I feel like, you know, feel like they kind of want to understand politics a bit, but also maybe don't have a super like long attention span.
Understood.
And get bored very quickly. No, because really that's me. Like, I obviously wrote
very
this book
so,
for
yeah.
me like a few years ago because I do obviously really care about politics and find it super interesting. And I guess that the case the book kind of tries to make as well is that politics is really fun. And once you're in it, and obviously I think there's quite a lot you need to like understand first, and you know how stuff works and who is who, etc. But then it is normally quite fun. That being said, you know, the slight caveat is that I now kind of want to die as a full-time political journalist because
Understood.
Everything is so bad. And so when I was doing promo for the books, when I was writing it, I was like, no, this is still fine, you know, politics, my passion, the job that I do every day. But yeah, by the time book promo came around earlier this year, people were like, so, you know, and I was just like, I just hate them all. I hate everything.
Oh, no.
Why did I write this stupid thing? But yeah, no, I'm sure politics will become good again at some
after
point.
This general election.
Ooh.
No, nothing.
There
no,
is a
nothing.
Real feeling that, like, both here and America, that we're so close to the very bottom that surely we must begin the ascent.
I generally think it can and will get worse.
Okay, that's good. That's
we're
good.
Not in the bottom yet.
Okay,
we're halfway
baby.
Down.
Oh my God, we
Absolutely.
Can't go this much again. I truly. Oh,
I know.
Please.
We can and we will. So this is basically an episode for anybody who wants to ask questions like, how does an election work? What's an MP? But is embarrassed too, because their friends will be like, what's wrong with you?
But I'm taking the mantle.
You're so brave.
Thank you so much. I'm taking it one for the team here. And sometimes you'll think, Tessa, that's so dumb. And you'll just have to think in your head, oh, she does know, but she's doing it.
And you'll never know which one is correct. Right.
And yeah.
Whereas just imagine I know all of it. Yeah. Absolutely not. Absolutely don't. So stressed every time I read. I think one of the things about politics, because I haven't read your book, full disclosure, but I will now. When I was like looking up what it was about and the blurb and stuff, it was the first politics book that I've had a look at. I've been like, oh, I understand all of the words. I know what this is about. This sounds really interesting. It's like taking an element of politics that actually is quite relatable, which is gossip and all of that sort of stuff. Which I think we don't realise it's such an important part of it. And I think that's why we wanted to bring you in, because I think I think they almost sometimes can rely on the fact that people don't understand it in order to continue running the country or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're like, I don't really get it, so I'll just vote for the person I voted last time. Why not? Because I don't understand all of those words. And you don't know what's spin, you know what isn't. And when the manifestos come out, it's like, I actually genuinely don't know what is real and what I should be paying attention to and what I shouldn't.
Yeah, there's so much smoke and mirrors. And like, we talked before about how the David Cameron, you know, dick in a pig issue.
Oh, I forgot about that. I was like, what are you talking about?
Oh, no, I'm thinking about it four or five times a day. and like how there is basically absolutely no evidence that that happened. But everyone's like, well, I like the story, so.
Wow, I mean, everyone's just like, he put his dick in a pig.
Yeah. That's will be the main thing about him, you know,
for the rest of his life.
Yeah, because that's how gossip works. We love a good story, and as soon as you can sort of smear somebody and get the rumor out there, it's out,
baby. It's not going back in. So let's start.
I'm going to start with my biggest and most stupid one, which is what is a politic? What is a general election, and why can we just call them constantly?
Oh, cool. I mean, the first one is obviously a general election. Well, it is effectively technically once every 5 years.
Okay.
So the country goes to the polls and you get the chance to vote for your Member of Parliament in your constituency. So a number of different candidates for a number of different parties will stand in each of Britain's 650 constituencies.
Okay.
Then people vote. And then obviously, so whichever, again, normally, whichever party gets a majority of the seats, then the leader of that party gets to become the Prime Minister.
Right. So the majority of the 650 available seats? Yes. And is a seat an actual
chair? It's a man sitting on a seat.
Is it a seat?
Tis not. The MPs sit on the green benches in the House of Commons.
It's a part of a seat.
So there are 650 available places.
Weirdly, because it's Britain and everything is weird and nothing makes sense, you can't, I think, actually fit. No, you definitely can't fit all the MPs on the green benches. So I think there's only space for like 400. And it's like, well done, guys.
Is that because...
your one job.
But. Is that because in the past there were less constituencies and so 400 was the correct number, or someone just fucked it right from the beginning?
I think the assumption, if I remember correctly, the assumption was basically that you really, really, really rarely have all the MPs in the chamber
Understood.
At the same time.
Okay.
And also because normally you'll see it like Prime Minister's Questions every Wednesday when the House is sitting, you'll have more MPs than usual there, but they can just stand.
Like that big Brexit debate, and everyone was stood up and everyone
standing
was
shouting.
It looked too full, didn't it? It was like, why does it look too full?
And you see now.
And now I know.
There's 250 extra people.
It's 650 butts rather than seats. Yeah. That's a fascinating.
And sometimes those butts have got to stand.
Yeah, sometimes they're bigger. Sometimes they're smaller.
So of those 650, do you only have to get 326 to sway into the... How much do you have to get to be the...
Fucking good math. So I was like, four.
Half of six, half of 50.
That's part of politics, isn't it? Numbers.
But no, but that's the one. And actually, the quite interesting thing is that the Prime Minister in Britain technically has no formal role, so they're first among equals, which means that their only role is that they can command a majority in the House.
Okay.
So, because when you look, so for example, at the Cabinet, so, you know, you'll say you'll have the Home Secretary, the Foreign Secretary, whatever, all of those people are technically more senior than the Prime Minister because they've got jobs. Okay. And the Prime Minister technically doesn't have a job. Is that it's just that if you can prove you can command a majority in the House, which is normally understood to be your party gain the most seats and you're the leader. But obviously sometimes, like in 2010 to 2015, parties can make a coalition and then, you know, the leader of that one party still lead, like, commands a majority
because
of several
they're now
in the
a
house.
Gang to yeah, got so the
you,
majority.
As
got
long
it.
As you have the numbers, then you're there, which is a slightly, I don't know. It
so
always struck me
problem?
As a weirdly odd
way
to do it. I don't know, it's all good of being like, yeah, well, guess you have the numbers, fine, you know.
Yeah,
okay.
Is a hung parliament, so what is exactly, so is a hung parliament where nobody really has had the majority but the two biggest parties join together? Or is it that one has a majority and they're like, well, we should, like, what's the, what will it take for a hung parliament to happen?
A hung parliament just means that no single party has an overall majority in the House, so yeah, the 326. But then obviously that can be a bit complicated because some parties like Sinn Féin get elected but don't take their seats and stuff. But anyway, and also there's the Speaker of the House of Commons who becomes sort of like magical MP slash non-MP when they become the Speaker. Love this country. It all makes sense. Big fan. But yeah, no, a hung parliament is just when no party gains an overall majority.
Right. So okay. That could that's happen. Basically that's a possibility. It's not likely, but that is a possibility.
It is making... Yeah, you know, technically it is possible whenever. Mm. It's just we seem to just really love them at the moment, specifically.
Yeah. But, yeah. So last thing on this is this, do Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson, are they still fighting for their seat in their constituency?
They are. They absolutely are. And there's even, it's probably not going to happen, but Boris Johnson in Uxbridge, his constituency doesn't have the biggest majority. So there's been actually a really big push from Labour
to try take him down.
So yes, that could happen. So the idea would be that actually, if that were to happen, if Boris was to lose his seat while Prime Minister...
There'd be a lot of memes.
So A, that, I think the first stage would be like a ton of memes.
Yeah.
And then after that, so another Tory MP with a massive majority would have to stand down to give his seat to Boris. And there'd be a by-election, so a special election, just one constituency, where Boris would win and then come back like 3 weeks later and be like, hey, I never left.
Wait, so when you say he has to come back 3 weeks later, where he has to go to ground for 3 weeks and then the country has no prime minister?
So I think, yeah, they're like, oh, Dominic Raab, like another cabinet minister, would just have to be like...
take over for a bit.
Yeah.
While Boris goes and campaigns in someone else's constituency.
Yeah.
To become their king and then return to power.
Yeah.
This is insane.
No, but again, that's why I have so much sympathy for people who are like, politics is very confusing. It's like, yes, it is. It is. Politics
is quite interesting.
Super confusing.
It's like, really, but there's so much like power play and chess moving that you don't realise. Like, so this, just for hypothetical, this very popular, heavy majority conservative person who wins their seat very strongly, he or she then has to fall on their sword and give up their place to the prime minister.
Yeah, but then the idea can be, and that's just conjecture, but my guess would be that whoever does that will then be put in the Lords and then may well be given a job as a minister from the House of Lords as like a prize for that.
Okay,
that's a really good bit of advice for anyone standing in any constituencies that Boris might like.
Yeah.
Watch your back.
Yeah.
Maybe a lord.
This is nuts.
So the 650 asses. In terms of tactical voting, because this is something that I think lots of people, I've just seen loads of tactical voting! And I nod and go, of course. And then when I try to explain it to somebody, I forget and I don't understand. So could you please explain for me and the people what tactical voting is and how we as people can work out whether we should do it or not?
I can even give you a short history of it because I wrote a feature on it recently.
Yes,
amazing.
Please.
It's fresh in my memory. And so tactical voting became a big thing in the UK actually in 97. So this group called GROT, Get Rid of Them, who were basically just like, the Tories have now been in power for like 150 years. This has to end.
Okay.
And so looked at all the different seats like in the previous election, basically which races were the closest. So, you know, like where Tories won, but maybe Labour came super close second, or the Lib Dems, or the SNP.
Mm.
And then from that, they created a list of all the constituencies where, you know, basically the Tories won by the smallest majorities. Let's say there's a constituency where the Tories won by a margin of like 70 votes and, you know, and Labour just had like 70 votes fewer than the Tories. But then, I don't know, like several thousand people voted for the Lib Dems as well. So then what they would say was like, well, listen, if your priority is just getting the Tories out and you don't really care, you know, who else wins, basically, okay, then you should vote Labour, because the Labour and Lib Dem vote combined is actually more than the Tory vote in that seat.
Right.
And so if all you guys basically go for the bigger party in that seat, then
So it's go for the
win.
Bigger party, the second one down from the Tories. I didn't realise it was just to get Tories out. out tactic. That's interesting. So that's because they are consistently they consistently have the majority, I suppose.
It could be used the other way around. So right. It could be
it was used against Labour as well in 2005. I can't remember who was the campaign, but there was a campaign being like, get Labour out, which obviously, did not work, but they tried. And so it can be any party, but it's just essentially it's just looking at different seats, looking at but especially the ones the races were very close.
Right.
And then seeing who was second best, and then trying to vote for them.
So you look at your own constituencies. So for example, like my one is a safe Labour, apparently. Mm. Matthew Pennycook, you're doing
great
work.
He's got a very long face.
He has got a long face, and it helped with some situation with the wetlands in the area. Really like him. He's been in there since 2015, and apparently he's been Labour for a long time. I suppose I'm fine. But I suppose it's if you look... Does everyone have to look at what the history of their constituency is and what the last... Or just the last election?
Is it called a swing seat? Is that right?
Is that American?
That's American. A marginal seat.
A marginal seat.
A marginal seat. So that's a seat where... everyone disagrees on how to properly define it, because, again, this is Britain, and why write things down and agree on things? But I think it's around 5%, so at 5 points. So if the winning party in that seat won by under 5 points, then it's a marginal seat. Okay. The idea being that basically... Okay.
There must be a website that's got a list of all the marginal seats.
Oh, great. But as I say, moving on from 97, what's made it... Because that was, super straightforward, and it was actually quite fun. So they worked with different left of centre newspapers like The Independent and stuff, and were like, just published literally lists of marginals, and were like, that one, right. SNP, that one, Labour, etc. But obviously, so I think now it is a lot harder, because partly because anyone can create a website to tell you who to vote for, according to whatever. But B, I think that has been the main issue this time round. We have far too much data. So in a weird way, it was nearly easier to be like, okay, we've got one set of numbers to look at, and it's one for the last election, and that's that. But now it's like, okay, well, do we look at that? Do we look at the results in the European election? Do we take into account, Remain, Leave in that area? Do we pay attention to the current polls? There's so much, basically, and... depending on, what you decide to pick, then it might tell you, well, actually, in that seat, Lib Dems definitely have a better chance. No, Labour, no, Lib Dems, no, SNP, whatever.
Right.
So I think it's become, in a weird way, like, the more data we have, the more confusing it is.
Right. So, but should the average voter maybe look at the general, look at the last election? Like, is that just for people at home being like, no, I don't know what to do? Like, is that the easiest way?
I think it is, but also it's just, I think, good to remember that it's really not an exact science.
Of course, right, okay.
And so, if you're going to be tactical voting, you may, it may be a good shout, or you may fuck it up.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess it's like, if you're in a seat that you really care about Labour, or you really care about the Lib Dems, but you know that, like, the Lib Dems will get 2%, and therefore your vote, while sort of like, well, thank you for your support, but it's actually... let's get some shit done. If it's like, no, it's so important to me that I vote for the party I care about, then do that. But if really you just care about not having the MP that you currently have, then go for number two down, even if you... don't
prefer the fourth one.
Even if you prefer number four, you know that number four is not going to get anything done.
Yeah.
Which is sort of how it feels when, like, tiny, small, very good parties emerge, that you sort of feel like, wonderful, thank you, but like you're actually
green
sort of...
Green Party.
And the Women's Party and lots of things like that. You're like, wonderful, Green, but, like, it would be more helpful if you could throw your weight to some, you're never going to take them down from position number four.
Yeah.
But if you put your weight behind number two, maybe we've got a chance.
Yeah. And you mentioned the polls there. Are there, like, particular polls? It's like, well, that's a good poll to look at, because there's so many polls every day. And there's also now, like, on Twitter, I've been drawn in by some, like, joke polls. I've been like, no way! It's like, oh, no, that is a joke. If someone's listening being like, I literally don't know where to find anything, what's a good poll? Is the YouGov good?
I think polls are quite tricky, partly so I feel like I really need to plug it now, but I actually do a podcast called Polling Politics.
Oh my god, great. Listen to Marie's podcast.
Yeah, pollster Jade Twyman, who's very good, and he's part of Delta Poll, formerly of YouGov. And it's obviously something we've talked about quite a lot, especially in the context of the election. And I think what especially pollsters want people to know is that polls are not predictions, they're snapshots. So it's not when people look at a poll, let's say published yesterday, let's make a fake one, saying that Labour actually would get a majority. Then, what people get from that is that, oh my God, Labour is about to get a majority. Maybe not. And there's the thing of, no, what it means that that's where the country was at you know, on the day, that on that day they asked people, that's how they felt, and that's that. And, you know, and it may well change, because I think every election there's going to be chatter of like, oh, well, the polls were wrong, because clearly, you know, they didn't predict what happened. It's like, and it's actually quite funny talking to pollsters, because they're really getting quite desperate. They're like, but we're not trying to predict. We never said to predict anything.
But also, I've never been asked. Like, who do they poll? So I've never once been asked.
He is a pollster?
He is.
So his job every day is to poll?
It is.
Wow. So what does that involve? What does it involve? Who does he poll?
I genuinely want to know who they poll.
If it was me, I would just poll myself. And then I would just hand in the results and be like, done.
I know. I think the interesting thing about polling is, I know he is the fact that, you know, his company will talk to a lot of people on different issues. So normally either for like newspapers or private clients or whatever, or for, you know, just their own stuff. But then, so I think that the difference between, you know, just us, I don't know, asking people in the street, you know, for their opinion on something and being like, it's a poll now. Yes. And what they actually do is the weighting of the poll. So it's comparing, so all the people, let's say you've asked like, you know, 300 people a question, and you'll have asked them as well, you know, their gender, their age, where they live, etc. And you have all that data as well for the general British population. And so you have to basically make certain opinions more important. But let's say you actually, you know, annoyingly got to an interview, so like 60% men and 40% women, because as we know, men just have opinions on everything. Yeah. But, you know, obviously it is 50-50 in the world, so you will give more weighting to the woman you pulled, so it basically, you know, correlates, because actually the electorate is not 60% men, 40% women,
right,
or whatever.
Okay.
So actually a lot of it is in the like very fine tuning of the weighting of like, yeah, trying to make the people, yeah, you pulled look more like the electorate.
I see, right. And so is there not a particular poll that we should all be looking at? It's just, we just have to take all of it with a bit of a, like a, how interesting, and now we move on sort of situation.
I think so. And I think basically now, and especially again, now there's so many polls, they're quite useful to look at the general movement things are going.
Yeah.
So normally, because obviously in every poll we'll get normally slightly different results as well. But if you get a thing of, let's say, and I think, you know, in the last week, every poll had Labour going up a bit, some of them by like 1 point, some of them by like quite a lot of points. Mm. So I think what you can get from that is, oh, Labour seems to be on the up somewhat.
Got it. Yeah.
And then so I think they're quite good for, yeah, just tracking the national mood of going, yeah, like, oh, who's broadly speaking going up, who's broadly speaking going down.
Understood.
And that's anything closer than that, and then you might set yourself up for disappointment or, yes, you know,
so I think it's like,
or, yeah.
So it's take it with a pinch of salt, take it with, it's this on this day, and it's a quiet reflection of something, but not a...
So if your faves aren't doing great, they might do great in the election. You don't know. It's just that on that Tuesday, they weren't doing great, I suppose. Right.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We thought it would be quite nice to just look at each of the manifestos. We're going to focus on Labour and Conservatives because, so sorry, Jo Swinson, but it's not likely that the Lib Dems are going to get some sort of windfall landslide. But best of luck. And if you're a Lib Dem listening, best of luck to you. So we thought we'd look at the manifestos of Labour and Conservatives. And obviously, you know, you may not have read them. So we'll
they're very boring. I have not.
Very boring, yeah. Long, right.
But on purpose. Like, they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
You release a
they
massive document
those things. Yeah.
That's full of waffle, and then you know that no one's going to dredge through it, and they're going to wait.
Little, what's the word? Your little tagline, yeah. Like "Get Brexit done and for the many, not the few." Yeah. So then everyone just goes, "Well, I suppose that's it."
Exactly. And then you trust that some journalist will wade through it, pick out the some sound bite that's in there, and yeah. Hope. Anyway, please. Sorry.
No, I'm just going to start with the Conservative manifesto. I just wanted to ask you if there was anything that you think is notable, or like basically the top lines of things that are interesting about the Conservative manifesto. We are going to be non-biased, and I hope nothing creeps out in my voice. For either.
Well, actually, the Tory manifesto is a bit of a weird one in that there's not much in it.
Interesting. Okay. How so?
I think that's what they wanted is just, you know, they kind of... You know, they wanted this to be the Brexit election. So they're like, okay, we see going big on Brexit. So, you know, saying we will leave, you know, on the deadline of the 31st of January 2020. Mm-hmm. But then also the transition period will last no longer than until December 2020. Okay. And then we're out and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, on the deal that Boris, I guess, sort of negotiated. So that's the main thing. Then they want to get tough on crime.
Great.
That's their big thing. Basically, yeah, like, you know, keep people in prison for longer and stuff and so forth. Mm. So big on that. Then, so health-wise, that's a slightly weird thing. So they've tried to go really big on health.
So with this NHS thing, may I ask, there's obviously been a lot, I found it very confusing because... Boris Johnson said in the debate repeatedly, we are not selling the NHS off. Then Labour said, oh, well, they said that they're going to actually privatise it, but just slowly so that no one will notice. And then everyone was like, yeah, well, those documents that Labour have revealed are actually pointless and they don't actually say anything. And then everyone was like, yes, they do. And what do you think?
Oh, shit.
It's okay if you don't think anything.
I'm not sure. So I think, okay, a bunch of different thoughts. I think on the documents themselves, as I think quite a lot of like genuinely impartial like wonks tweeted about at the time, they were like actually reading through that. That looks like quite normal talks of like at the beginning of any talk on anything, you do have to discuss, you know, what each party actually wants and, you know, what will be the topic of discussion.
Rather than...
And where, you know, kind of draw the big lines and being like, okay, what we'll be talking about, you know, how far can we push on this, how far can we push on that, etc. So I feel like the people I've seen talking about it who know what they were talking about didn't seem especially worried.
About the NHS, right.
Yeah. And then on the privatisation thing, I'm not sure because I do think that having had that chat with a number of Tory mates in the past... Their argument is always, well, we have been in power for quite a lot of years since the NHS was created. It's still here. Like, you know, you know, and their argument is like, well, you know, if we'd really wanted to just privatise it, we probably would have done it.
Right.
And I do think that actually the vast majority of Conservative MPs, not all of them, but I do think a majority of them generally do want to keep a sort of like, you know, public NHS, that's through our point of use.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, you know, so I think that's the thing. So I think they would be comfortable probably selling off bits of it and making bits of it private, but not necessarily for the end point of, you know, and then it'll be fully privatised, ha, 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 ha.
Right.
But it's just, I think there's that. And I think, you know, there's probably the argument as well that they would put sort of like less funding in to the NHS than Labour would, which is probably why Labour tends to lead on the issue more, because Labour is just like, you know, clearly there's a massive funding crisis in the NHS. But yeah, no, so they...
So it's not as hysterical. I think maybe this will be a constant, is it? It's not always as hysterical as everyone would like you to believe, whereas like Boris is literally like waiting desperately to sell it to Trump and Jeremy Corbyn is like, I'll save it, like it's not, whereas it, obviously the political discourse is always that, isn't it? It's always just like, oh, one's a saviour and one's evil, or then it switches around, one's incompetent and one's competent. And it's very difficult to keep a level head. So that was very interesting, because that kind of shows that there was more to it. And obviously you don't know because you're not in the rooms, but like you've got more of an overview than I have.
I think the thing is like it's sort of a small end of the wedge that like obviously it won't be like day one and it's off.
That's the end.
That's the end. NHS is gone and everything costs £1,000. I think it's more like it will be very slow privatisation in which they sell bits of it off.
And that is a possibility,
and,
yeah.
And I think once that begins, once you've like set a precedent of like, oh, this worked when we sold, you know, this small section, like it will just become greater and greater.
But that's already kind of the case if I were to agree with that. I do think that, you know, that there are already bits, you know, and partly from New Labour, are there already some like, you know, private bits of the NHS, kind of, you know, obviously like private contracts, etc. And they're, they're kind of there. But you know, I think that being said as well, and that's going to be with a huge caveat because I'm not a health policy specialist, but I think on all sides, if you talk to the experts, they're like, this is all nice that we keep fucking arguing about, you know, either privatisation or just funding and that's it, when actually a lot of the problems in the NHS are a lot more complex than that. And it's about the way it's run, it's about who really has the power, it's about the administration, right, the different hospitals, etc. So again, all that stuff you'd only really know about, I think, if you're really an NHS expert.
Yes.
Which I am not, so I will not get into the detail
absolutely
of it. But I think is that as well, when you get stuck into a really simplistic debate, you lose the idea that, you know, and again, when you talk to health professionals, they're like, well, actually, that's like, you know, super far down the list of like things that we need
we
to sort
care
out
about,
like,
as actual medical professionals.
It's yeah,
very interesting. Right, so you're saying let's
but yeah,
no,
so on that note, so I think they do have some stuff. So well, like, that was a slightly weird one because they're going to bring in 50,000 nurses.
Oh yeah,
but then there was that puzzling interview with Matt Hancock. We're like, well, no, well, they're not extra nurses, and it's like,
it's like, isn't
what,
like 19,
what are they now?
1,000 nurses already exist. It's like, well, that's not, how can that be?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that
so
genuinely
30,000 more nurses.
Unclear. A number of nurses. There will be a number of extra nurses that may be new, but may not be new.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think something that people find very hard with all of these promises is like, they have already been in power for 9 years.
Why aren't they already
so
there?
So for you to be like, well, no, I promise, you know, and also there's feels this real like, you know, well, it will be shit under Corbyn. You're like, well, it's quite shit now, and you're in charge.
It might be nice to have an alternative.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're like, you can't be like, we promised to bring in 50,000 more nurses, but like, why are they not already here?
That's possibly the constant, maybe, difficulty of someone, the party who was in power in an election, having to be like, well, we'll promise these things, and being like, well, you've done
this election should be like, look at our backlog of work, like, look what we've done, and we will continue to do this good work.
But I think the weird thing must be that in that period of time, they have had 3 prime ministers, and that's probably not great, because it is quite, general elections get quite personal. So I think it's the weird thing where Boris can't really go, well, look at, you know, everything I did over the past few years, because it wasn't him. And obviously he's not exactly a close friend of Theresa May or David Cameron's.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but equally, you know, he can't just rubbish them, because then that rubbishes the party. So it's like, so I think, you know, it is that slightly weird thing when you had several PMs while a party has been in power. Like that last one is a bit like, unclear.
Yeah, I don't know
how to
what
go
to
about
say
this.
Brexit, get Brexit done.
There's busy that. But then, so apart from that, so they'll end hospital parking fees for night shift workers, disabled people, and relatives of the terminally ill.
That's very nice.
And we'll bring
but
in.
But again, that's like, oh my God, why was that not already in place? Like,
of course.
I did not know that was even a thing. Like, that's insanity. So to be like, we promised to end this, you're like, you absolutely should. The fact that that's still, the fact that that's in place is testament that you.
I think where there's a weird thing, so I've not followed it super closely because it's really dull. But I think there is some debate over like hospital parking fees, because apparently when like it's free, it's just people in the area end up parking there. Mm-hmm. So people with, you know,
the
ill
need
like
a space.
Relatives, just don't want. But I don't really care because it was very dull. It was one of those debates where like people got super worked up as well. And I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
There's always more to it than like the Conservatives love getting money from those people who have friends who are sick and they're visiting them in hospital and people who are doing night shifts. It feels like there has to be a reason that that hasn't happened already. But I guess as well, they will have to. Yeah, I don't know how they'll tackle the concept of then people just parking in those spaces. But the hospital car parks are massive, so I'm sure it's fine.
But then, so I think with that, so actually coming back to what we were talking about, they're bringing back nursing bursaries, which, in fact, I'm not entirely certain, but I'm almost certain the Conservatives were the one who cut the nursing bursaries. Mm-hmm. And it's like, just kind of a nice that, well, fuck that one up.
Yeah, let's bring it back.
Sorry. Just sliding it across the table, just being like, sorry, sorry.
You can have your money back now.
Apart from that, what are the issues? Yeah, again, there's really not much.
It's just Brexit face.
So there's, I mean, it's still, they aim to reach net zero in terms of like carbon emissions by 2050, but we knew that.
Okay.
And everyone says that 2050 is definitely too late.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's not, like, that's not really a sexy headline kind of grabbing thing.
That's, we'll definitely be dead by the time the...
But
that's way too far.
Yes. Yes, but I know, But they're all quite old, aren't they? So they're all just like, well, it doesn't really affect me. So
no, it's a weird thing. Like Bill and Melinda Gates once attempted to do malaria zero. Oh. And they were like, we will eradicate malaria in a year. And everyone was like, gosh.
Maybe give it like
Give yourself a chance. Yeah. You know? Whereas like, of course you can't do that. Whereas this is the polar opposite that's like way too long and pointless. We'll be living underwater by that point.
But that's kind of it. That's kind of it. It's basically just, a lot of Brexit with a cider crime. In a bit of nurses.
Bit of nursing bursts. okay, should we turn to Labour? Because they're promising lots of things. What are the most exciting things that they're promising?
They are. Well, I do feel like we have to start with Brexit. Sorry, this is very boring.
No, we absolutely have to.
But actually, that's one on which I will really defend Labour, because I feel like lots of people, including like Labour supporting people, have been like, ugh, like the Labour plans on Brexit are so confusing and so weird, like why they're doing that. It's actually really straightforward. It's like, if Labour were to win, they'd go to Brussels, negotiate a softer deal, you know, as with Labour policy, and then they'd take it to the country and be like, hey, by the way, it's been a while. Do you want this deal? Or actually, do you just want to, like, call the whole thing off? And that's that. Which I generally think is not, like, it's quite a good shout.
Yeah. I feel as well of the pulling point of the Conservatives is that, well, there's already a deal. So it's, and Boris keeps saying, it's ready to go in the oven. He's making a lot of cooking references. Mm-hmm. But there is a very distinct possibility, I'm sure, that they will have to negotiate another deal, because they've had to negotiate just consistent deals constantly. Mm. So there's not that much difference between the two. The only difference is that Labour will give us the option, whereas Conservatives will probably, there'll probably be some back and forth between Europe anyway. Mm. The deal that, as it currently stands, is not likely to be the one that we go out on the 31st of January with. And we don't even know if we're going to go on the 31st of January, because it keeps being pushed back anyway. So it feels a bit like, yeah, I felt like that when it was all like, that's very confusing. I was like, actually, it just sounds the same, but with just a little bit more choice for everybody.
I don't know. I would argue, and I think, and that's, I don't know, that's partly a failure of the press, but also I'm not sure how the press could have handled that differently. But we've not talked that much, actually, about what's been in all those deals, like what was in Theresa May's withdrawal agreement, yeah, what true. Boris changed, etc., like, you know, and what Labour would offer. Like, there's been little. And I think that the Labour deal, because it would have a closer relationship with the EU, would, A, you know, like the economy would take a lot less of a hit, but also would, this is the boring technical bit, but this is only, like, and I feel like we keep forgetting this, the deal we've been arguing about for like 1,000 years now is only the beginning. It's not even, like, we've not even talked about the future relationship really between the UK and the EU. This is just the terms of the exit. That's
it.
Oh
God, right. Okay.
So you know, there's the argument as well that Boris's deal and whatever Labour would negotiate would set Britain on very different paths in terms of like what the future relationship would be.
Interesting.
So actually, those deals would be like genuinely sort of like different.
I see. It's difficult for us to know that, because then we just don't, like you say, we don't know about any of the other deals, the past deals, really, because they're so complicated and then they just didn't work. And then I also can't fathom what the Labour deal would be. Do you know, like, it's like, so we interpret, but then at the same time, it's like, well, like you said, an alternative would be nice, because it's not working as it is. Mm. So there's always that as well.
Yeah, I think everybody has got, by just keep shouting, get it done, we've no concept of what it or the word done means in that. And so that everybody knows they're playing to a, you know, it's not clear. They know that we're too confused by it. They know that we don't know what on earth we're talking about. And they know that we're extremely bored. And
just so bored.
We're very bored of it, of the whole thing. So everyone's like, yeah.
Imagine how I feel.
Oh my God, yeah. Constantly bombarded with Brexit. But yeah, okay. Well, I suppose that's a difficult one for people to get their heads around, as to one might think that, yes, let's just get out because I'm bored. And then there's the other thing of just like, well, let's try another option that's softer, that maybe it feels like with Labour, maybe we would be able to understand it a bit more. They would make it a bit easier for us to understand and then put, because if we're going to vote on it, we have to understand it. Whereas with the Conservative one, we don't have to understand it for that to be put into place, which I think is, I find to be the kind of crucial difference between, as someone who doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely mind-blowing that, well, firstly, that David Cameron resigned on the day. Like, he should have had the balls to be like, I fucked it, and now I'm going to be a leader. And
I'll stay for breakfast.
And I'll stay for breakfast, you know, like, very classy. Rather than just, like, pre-ejaculating and then like, wandering out the door and being, humming, being like,
talking of class.
Is that, yeah, well, sorry.
No, it's good. No, I liked it.
But, like, that is, you know, that's the, like, at the moment when true leadership was needed, he immediately just ran for the hills. Mm. And when people needed him desperately to sort of steer the country, and exactly what
he
you're saying.
He would have been, like, kicked out by the Tory MPs.
Oh, he 100% would, but just the, you know, he should have had the balls to stay and be taken down rather than be, you know, just scuttle off. Like, and he should have put those things in place, exactly that, to be like, okay, here's a completely divided nation. Mm. Some of whom think this and some of whom think this. Let's go out and let's ask the people what it is they need and be like, okay, we obviously need to sort out this and this and this, but otherwise, is everyone cool with the rest of it? Okay, let's, you know, carry on rather than this, you know, give some people some black passports and then, you know, let's not talk about this again rather than let's argue relentlessly about this for the next 10,000 years.
But also, and I think one of the bigger I think when we look back at Brexit in like decades to come, one of the bigger mistakes was Theresa May deciding to trigger Article 50 before she knew really what she wanted.
Yeah, that was quite
tricky. And it's like, that's not, you know, that's just decision making 101 when, you know, you don't want, like, I don't know, you know, like looking at work, I'm not going to set myself a deadline for a piece I'm writing if I don't know what the fucking piece is. It's one of those where it's like you kind of need, and the fact that she was just like,
well, you know, that's the thing.
Big red button. It's like, that's not how politics should work.
Yeah, in many ways, that is sort of what people do recommend with trying to write something, is like, set yourself a deadline, you know?
Give that example.
No, that's what I mean. It's like, it is the perfect personal example, but if you're running, an entire world economy, you know, who everybody will be affected by this thing, don't be like, yeah. I just put it in. I just did it.
Let's get back to the Labour manifesto. Yes. And yeah, anything that sort of particularly piqued your interest?
In terms of the environment, I think they're quite interesting. So they're not committing actually to a strict deadline for net zero.
Okay.
They're saying they're aiming to have net zero on carbon emissions by 2030.
Okay.
But basically know that that may not be possible, but they want to get as close as possible to it. It would plant 2 billion trees by 2040.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
I'm into it. Big fan of trees.
Someone did a breakdown that was like, and I think the end was something like, if that's true, then they will have to be planting like 36 trees per second or something.
No, but that was a super interesting debate actually on Twitter. I feel like Twitter at its best of like people coming up and being like, hi, I'm actually an expert tree planter. And turns out, super easy to plant trees, which I did not know like 48 hours ago. But it's apparently just like, yeah, you can plant 1 million a day quite easily. And it's like, what?
Wow.
Also, yeah, A, what? B, why we're not doing it. See, I want 1 million trees now.
Yeah. Like, I want to help. I want to help plant the trees.
Give me some tree seeds. I don't know how the nature works.
We'll do it. Well, we aren't doing it because people would rather Trump's like, what if we put a reflector in space and the sun shone back on itself? Ideas. Like, we would genuinely rather that than just be like, let the planet tell you what it needs, which is more trees.
That's
like,
so funny.
We don't, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so bizarre.
I'm slightly dead as the idea of like a big sun mirror.
Yeah.
like a big magnifying glass over the sun.
And people are like, let's invest in that. Probably put £1 trillion or something. Thank you so much.
But I think interestingly as well, they do have quite a good plan on how to get stuff done. So they would have a green industrial revolution, which would add 1 million jobs to the employment market and shift industries like construction, electricity, transport and gas towards renewable energy. So it's not just about reaching net zero. It's about kind of like reshaping society as well in a way that makes it sort of like more
like practical almost. You can see how that, because that's the problem, isn't it, with the all of those, you know, especially like the northeast, those kind of industrial mines and factories and things, they don't fit in with this new kind of like green wave. So if there's some way that we can, or that Labour can,
yes, that's exactly it. It's not just about being like, oh, there's no more mines, there's no more this, there's no more thing.
Let's change them.
It's this now. You still have a job, but then you're making more money, but now we make this.
With some green paint.
We make green paint. You know, it's not about saying, oh, everyone's going to lose their job. It's been like, you've got a job.
Yeah.
Like, you've got, you know.
It's just going to be more world healthy.
Exactly, rather than just getting rid of things.
And then, and actually I'm going to have to mention, because I forgot the Tory thing, this is the really boring bits about work and taxes, etc.
Yeah.
So the Tories would raise the national insurance threshold to 9.5k next year and eventually raise it to 12.5k.
Okay.
So meaning the first, 9 to 12k you earn, you would not have to pay national insurance on it.
Okay. How would that affect anything?
So currently you don't have to pay it on £10,000.
Okay, right, interesting.
And now you get an extra £2,000, basically.
Okay.
You know how when you do your tax return.
No, but what do the government use the national insurance contributions for? Like, with that... That's not... Marie looks like she's going to explode.
They put it in the big taxes pot.
But I guess
And then when they need money, they take it from the big taxes pot.
Understood. So you presume that Labour have got income somewhere else, or like they're going to be getting money somewhere else.
Labour are taxing over 80,000.
To make up for that. I see. Right.
So that's, yeah.
Whose is that? The Tories.
Tories. Right. The Tories, yeah. But no, so Labour. So yeah, Labour would increase income tax on those earning over 80k a year.
Right.
And also reverse George Osborne's inheritance tax cuts.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's a really interesting thing that I think says so much about it is that like Jacob Rees-Mogg writing his like disaster capitalism book, and like so many people currently involved in Brexit literally bet heavily on it, you know, and like shorted the market, whatever they did in The Big Short, stuff that we cannot comprehend. And there's like billions of pounds on the line. And also I met a investment broker. Hello.
Hello. At a party, who was like, people are running with their money out of investment firms because people are concerned that if Labour get in, like, the investment market will collapse. And so that sort of tells you everything you need to know, which is like the big money group, like the inheritance tax being changed. Like, this is, you know, and there's a whole documentary about them changing it from being called like inheritance tax to death tax, or, you know, the other way around. That, like, if it feels like a thing that basically it's like, the Tories are so key, like, people with a lot of money are making more money here, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if it's like, and then, is it, yeah, anyway, that's fine.
But I always find it, so there was a study I thought was super interesting on how the super wealthy, quite recently, were still more scared of Corbyn than a no-deal Brexit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I read that.
Like, but also that's really weird, because just like in very factual terms, you know, whatever happens with Corbyn, even if, you know, like McDonald takes over and whatever and goes like full hard left, like, it's still, I think the super wealthy would still lose more cash, or, you know, kind of their companies would tank more in a no-deal Brexit than under a Corbyn government, which, yeah, as a factual thing. So it's really interesting how ideology clearly supersedes, I think, anything factual on that. But so just to finish on the manifesto, Labour, we've not talked about Labour in the NHS. Okay. So they would increase the amount it spends on health by 4.3% every year. Offer $1.6 billion a year for mental health services, which I think is very good, because everyone's brain is broken now. And also, the one I'm genuinely quite excited about, free dental checkups for everyone.
Good
yes,
Lord.
Please.
I know. My dentist has been texting me for the last 2 years saying, you're overdue for your checkup. And I'm like, I don't want to spend that amount of money.
I feel fine. I've been meaning to go for quite a long time as well, which is, I think, this policy specifically. I'm like, you have caught my attention.
Yes,
it has been months. I was hanging out with a friend in the pub yesterday who was like, just got my teeth cleaned. And I'm like, why would you shame me like that? Like, And other than that, Labour would raise the real living wage to £10 an hour for all workers above 15, because obviously currently 16 to 18-year-olds and less than their older counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some childcare stuff as well from the parties. Well, I think the Tories are creating a £1 billion fund dedicating to getting high quality and affordable childcare, but it's not entirely clear yet how they're going to spend that billion.
Okay.
But, you know, that's nice.
Yeah.
And Labour would include 30 hours a week of free childcare to all preschool kids. And mothers or partners sharing parental leave would get a full year of maternity leave.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's nice. That is nice.
No, I wrote that bit and it's like, oh, that's just quite
lovely.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what would you say, because obviously the Labour manifesto is a lot more detailed and there's less just about Brexit, but lots of people saying that they are overpromising and they can't possibly afford. But then I read something that said that, like, an economist looked at it and was like, no, there's not any, like, they would be able to afford that. It seems their budget, it seems pretty legit. It's very difficult to know what to believe.
Well, my favourite, by which I mean most depressing bit, was the IFS, the Institute for Fiscal Studies, which is normally, so it's the think tank that is always in charge of, you know, whenever a government does a budget, for example, the IFS will be the ones the day after being like, you know, it's good or bad, this can happen,
right,
this can't happen. It's
okay.
Kind of their thing.
Follow
and
the
then
IFS
after the manifesto,
Twitter.
They were like, yeah, no, neither manifesto really works financially.
So interesting.
Fucking great.
Okay.
Cheers for that.
That's good to know. We need to know this stuff. Okay.
But also, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I always find the fights about, oh, how are we going to spend that, you know, and like, with that work and stuff on manifestos quite boring, because it's like, well, actually, you know, there will always be 1 million different ways to interpret manifestos and be like, oh, but actually, you know, and it's always the thing of, like, if the Tories are looking at the Labour manifesto, they'll try and add up all the, like, top figures, you know, to be like, look at how much they'd be spending and vice versa and stuff. And it's like, actually, you know, most of the time you can get what you want to get from a manifesto if you try hard enough. So
yes, and also the manifesto shows in another way, it just shows the kind of general ideology of a party, what they would like to do if they had that money, rather than, oh, technically, can you do all of this in the first year? Like, of course they can't, but it's worth a read or worth looking at all of the party's manifestos just to see if it's
also, would you like a very nerdy fact?
Yes please.
Cool. Which I really enjoyed. So part of the reason why parties put a shit ton of occasionally, like, seemingly random stuff in the manifestos is that there's a long-held convention in British politics that, because, you know, the way it happens, normally stuff in a manifesto, whatever, but let's say a party in government, they want a new law, like, you know, a new bill on something, and so it goes through the Commons, then through the Lords, Commons, Lords, so it kind of does that for a while, different amendments, etc. However, the House of Lords is not allowed to vote down a bill if it was in the manifesto of the party who won. So basically, if you stick a thing in the manifesto, it means that your only job and your only threat is in the Commons, not in the Lords. Back from, I think, the first Labour government who got elected, but then at the time the House of Lords was just full of Tories, and they were like, well, listen, we've got to do something about this, because, like, the Lords will just vote down everything we do otherwise. And so the compromise they reached was like, okay, well, fine. If what you're putting through is stuff you did get elected on, like, so that was part of your manifesto and your platform, then we will not vote it down.
And so that's why. Like, pops that's up in just in case. The bill goes
why
through.
Aren't they popping more stuff in?
Pop it in. But that's why it's quite interesting, because it feels like, you know, the Tories will just do very little. And then obviously, you know, you can still do stuff. That's not that.
Amazing.
Isn't it really cool?
And exactly what Mary said, like, it feels like if the Tories have not got a lot of stuff in their manifesto, it's like they're not even bobbing to hedge their bets on it being taken down.
But then I think it's a fine line to tread on, because that's kind of what Theresa May tried to do in 2017. Look, the manifesto was thick, like there was a ton of stuff there.
Right.
But then obviously the more stuff you put, the more potential there is for controversy to be about, you know, even a minor thing.
About dementia tax thing.
So, yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. So I think you've got to have that balance between we want to try and, you know, try and put in everything we can think of. So if we really want to do it, then we can get it through the Lords. But equally, the more you put, the more chance you have of getting a policy that'll get bad headlines. So it's quite hard to balance out.
That should be the American system. Like, you should have one idea. Mm. And if you get voted in, then no one can fight you.
Yeah, you just do it. Yeah. I have a question from listener Alice,
Hello, Alice.
She says, I would love if you could discuss whether the parties have kept their promises in recent history, because there's lots of promises in the campaign for X amount to the NHS or X amount to tackle homelessness. But these promises have been made before, and I'd love to know the history of sticking to them because I'd much rather vote for a promise that will be stuck to rather than arbitrary pipe dream. Now, obviously, it's very difficult to go like, well, the answer is not going to be the Labour have always, the Tories have never. It's much more difficult. But if so, that's fine if you can't, but it'd be good to know your thoughts about that on a whole.
Well, there's been, there was a really fascinating study on exactly that topic a few years ago, which I don't have on me because I don't carry studies I've read around.
Why
sadly,
not?
I know. However, I can tell you where it's from, and it's a very good book, especially if you're like only like a bit interested in politics or again, have no attention span like me. It's called Sex, Lies and the Ballot Box.
Ooh.
And it's basically, there's two people who got, I can't remember how many, but let's say like 30 academics who study politics, and they're like, okay, so, hey, your life's work, can you condense it into 2,000 words and also make it entertaining? Great. And so it's just that, so it's 30 2,000-word essays on, like, one topic that someone is a complete expert on. It's really, really good. But anyway, so one of them...
Wow.
Yeah. I've read it twice because I am tragic.
But one of fascinating.
Them, yeah. One of them was about, actually, you know, how much actually gets done, you know, between manifestos and, like, people in power. And actually, it's... I can't remember the exact figure, but it's something quite high, actually, not quite 70%. But I remember, like, it's quite a high figure. So actually, political parties do a lot of what they say they will do. So they don't actually break promises that often. However, the massive caveat in that study was that manifestos are always very good at making most stuff quite vague.
Right.
So it's quite hard to... So obviously, apart from, like, normally a few big eye-catching policies... It's more like promises to do more on this or make sure we consult on this, whatever. And it's always quite hard to be like, okay, well, you know, who gets to decide whether they've done enough for it to be like a commitment that they've fulfilled or not. But actually they tend to do a lot. But then I think the other thing on that as well is that it can be a bit of a tricky one, because if you're just like a normal voter, like a normal person, you're probably not very likely to read an entire party's manifesto. What you're going to read is probably the leaflets you get from your different MPs or, like, you know, read stuff from your MP. And there's always going to be, I think, a discrepancy between... Because I think it's entirely fair for a local, let's say local Tory MP to be like, these are the issues I care about. You know, if elected, I'll care about this and this and that. What that means, you know, if especially assuming that person doesn't become a minister or anything, doesn't become like randomly the prime minister overnight, is that they will fight in parliament and within the party to get stuff done on those issues. So let's say green issues or whatever.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there's still one MP in a party, like in a system that's based on political parties. So there's only so much they can do.
Right.
So I think that's the thing as well, when keeping in mind kind of, you know, expectations of an MP, there's only so much they can do as like one member of parliament.
Yes. So there is also, so when Alice is, for example, looking at the manifestos, it's quite likely that 70% of that stuff will get done, but just not in the way in this, because I suppose like a lot of the headlines will focus on the things that maybe they didn't do. Like, so the left will focus on the things that the Tories didn't do, and then the right will. But so I guess it's more like, don't think about that so much and just vote for the manifesto that really you identify with the most and that you think works for you the best.
That, or also, you know, it can be the case, you know, that you want, and especially I think this election has been like quite specific for that as well, in that quite a lot of people seem to be very unhappy with the party they usually vote for. And now that's, you know, I think all sides, all Brexit sides, all left and right, etc. A lot of voters are like, well, you know, I'm usually Tory, but that's a faff, or I'm usually Labour, but that's a faff, etc. And then I think what happens is that you can also, because a lot of what an MP does is work in the local area as well. Mm-hmm. So obviously, because I feel like we've talked a lot about the House of Commons and, you know, all the butts on the seats, etc. But at the end of the day, you know, an MP is very much a local person. They take care of their constituencies. So I think it's always fair, especially for maybe MPs who are already, you know, are currently MPs, to look at their record in the local area as well. You know, have they been good? Have they been helpful to constituents in need? Have they, you know, been good at caring for the area, both internally, but also maybe if there's a problem in that area, being able to go up to Parliament, go up to the relevant minister and be like, listen, there's that problem in my constituency, fix it. So I think that there's a lot as well about the local stuff, like beyond the party politics of like, you know, is your MP a good local person?
Because that is, at the end of the day, who you're voting for. You're voting for your MP, aren't you? You're not voting for Boris or Jeremy or Joe. You're Boris. Yeah, that's fascinating. Is there anything else that you wanted to ask Marie, Tessa?
No, I feel full
of Marie.
Full of Marie, yet deeply tired by the whole notion of British politics. I did see a really nice quote from somebody on Instagram that was like, voting is not like marriage. You get on a bus that is going in generally the right direction. Don't wait for one that's going perfectly where you want to go. You know, just like start traveling.
That's great.
Sorry, I do not know what that says about me, but I genuinely thought the way that quote was going to go was like, voting is not like marriage. It's more like trying to pick someone up in a club at 3 a.m. where, you right. know, there's only the people that are
exactly.
here.
Like you've got exactly. to pick from them. You don't have to you don't have to marry this person. We're just looking for any... We're taking the
a
best...
hot bang.
A hot bang from the best of a bad group. From the lights have come on, take what you can get, you know?
Yeah.
You don't have to... It doesn't say that much about, you know, you just like...
Who do you like to shag the most?
Who do you want to shag the most, you know?
Is it Jeremy? Is it Bob?
Yeah, and
it,
honestly, it's neither.
Upsetting. Yeah,
both but, at the same time. Thank you.
But it's just like, this
devil's
will
threesome.
This will do. Whereas if you constantly are waiting for the very, you know, we're all desperate for like our Obama to arrive.
Oh my God.
And our Obama.
And a lot of people hated Obama. Do you
exactly.
know what I mean?
And like, our Obama does not look like he's coming anytime soon.
Not for a while.
Not for a while. So there's no point sitting it out waiting for Obama. Just like pick someone in the club.
Yeah. They're the people who are here now. Yeah. And they've both sort of shown that they're interested.
Yeah.
They
once looked in your direction.
And that is
and
enough.
And at this point in the night, that's enough. They'll come home with you.
But thank you so much, Marie. What's your Twitter handle for people who want to follow you?
It's at Young Vulgarian.
And may you tell us why?
Just because I was trying to find a name for my Twitter ages ago, and there's a really good song called Here Come Young Vulgarians from a band called The Makeup, and also Young Vulgarians were so cool. They were girl gangs in the 50s in New York who had the massive, like, you know, the kind of Amy Winehouse type beehives, and they'd hide knives and razors in their massive beehives for street fights.
Good Lord.
Oh, God.
Well, look, she's put some thought into her Twitter handle. I'm very jealous of your Twitter handle.
Marie's book is out now. It is called Haven't You Heard? What?
What's that, Stu?
I haven't heard.
Well, by the buff, for God's sake.
Jesus.
Gossip Power and How Politics Really Works.
And is it like a specifically good place to buy that? Like, do you prefer it on Amazon or not on Amazon?
I feel really bad because lots of people have been like, oh, like, I really want to be helpful. Like, what's the way that gets you the most money? And it's like, listen, I'm baby. It. I don't know.
I'm
don't
baby.
Expect me to know these things.
I believe if you get them from a large bookshop.
Like Waterstones,
other bookshops available, it means that they then have a note to be like, oh, a lot of people, this was very popular. Let's move this to the front.
Go to Waterstones.
I believe buying it in person is the most helpful.
And please, we've not got a book, but we have got a Twitter handle at Nobody Panic Pod, and I'm at Stevie M. The S is a 5. At Tessa Coates.
No cool history.
There's no cool history. It's just our names, and mine's got a 5 in it. Please like, subscribe, buy Marie's book. I hope that was helpful.
Podcast is called Polling the Pollsters.
Polling Politics.
So,
I feel like you were close.
Polling Politics. Listen to Marie's podcasts. And yeah, I mean, look, best of luck, everyone, on December 12th.
Pick someone in the club. And for God's sake, vote.
Well, if you haven't registered, you can't. But register for next time,
register
please.
Now for next time.
There'll be another one in 2 weeks. We know that.
Yeah.
And now you know if it's a hung parliament, you know what that means.
And even if you think, what's a bloody point? I'm not even done doing it. Go and do it.
Come on.
Come on.
Don't leave the club alone.
No, exactly. Take anyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one is coming. This one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.